episode 26 of Drunk on Comics, starting now.
Hey guys, welcome once again to Drunk on Comics. My name is Derek. With me this week, we're kind of going back to basics. It's just me and Tony.
We are the incredible duo.
The dynamic dumbsome. Well, this is our podcast about comic books, conventions, and wait for it, full frontal gratuitous nerdity. Yeah.
I got that.
So, welcome everybody that's listening. Kevin and Matt are off doing all kinds of family things, being that's a holiday weekend for us. So, Tony and I are going to just ramp it up, and we got a ton of books to talk about. So,
I like how Matt's doing family stuff, and I'm not there.
Yeah, because you're part of the family. Well, you know, part of the family that he likes.
Yeah.
All right. So, we're going to kick it off the shelf. This is our section where we're going to talk about new comics that came out this week. Off the Shelf is brought to you again this week by Intercomics. It's your source for all your comic book needs. Find them online at inter-comics.com. They ship worldwide. They are based in England. So, you know, if you don't live in England, doesn't matter. You can still get your books. They also have tons of blogs and cool stuff about comics that came out, reviews, you know. Great place to go. Check them out. So go check out inter-comics.com. Tony, you want to kick it off?
Yeah. I'm going to start, and it's weird that I'm going to follow up. I try to mix up my comics of which ones I'm going to talk about just to give the listeners a better broad range of what we tend to like here. Mm-hmm. But actually, I didn't even do this the last time. It was Nick who stole my book to do it, Iron Man, when he did Iron Man number one. And I'm going to follow that up with Iron Man number two.
Well, that is the correct order of them.
Yes, so. It is. Unless it was a point one. And it's weird, too. I feel like comic books are coming out a lot quicker than they used to.
You know, I've got to say, like, I'm pretty sure there's a lot of stuff that's been coming out every other week.
Yeah.
Because I'm sitting here going, like, you know, I carry my books back and forth from my place to yours when we're doing these. And I'm taking comic books. It's like every other week I'm taking comic books out. I'm taking comics out to log them as I get my new ones. And I'm like, wait a minute. Why do I have two of these same, you know?
Yeah, and I'm enjoying it. My wallet's not enjoying it.
Trust me, I know. I spent so much. But anyway, let's get into Iron Man number two.
Okay. Written by Kieran Gillen and art by Greg Land.
Jay Leiston still doing the inks on that?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, he and Greg Land have worked together forever, it seems like.
And the man who is the hardest working man in comics.
Joe Caramagna.
Yep.
Did the letters. We love Joe. Oh, I when we get to news and notes, I got to talk about Joe. So.
All right. Pretty much this is obviously following the first one where we've talked about the extremists. Virus is out there, and they're using it to enhance other beings. This being a huge enemy of Tony Stark, I guess you'd call it, enemy symbiote part of him. He doesn't want it to fall in the wrong hands. In the beginning of this comic, you see him starting from scratch. He's making a new AI for his suit, which, as Pepper Potts kind of says, why are you going back to that? This thing sounds kind of retarded. And it's probably going to break on you. And he just, you know, it's fundamentals. Start from scratch. Which is kind of cool because it gives it a sense of why he might be a little depowered, because he's trying to start make a whole new armor from the beginning, and you kind of seeing how it goes. He gets a call from the person that has the virus saying, hey, we're going to do a duel. If you win, you get the virus. If my guys win, we get some of your tech.
It just sounds a little odd. We're going to duel. If you win, you get the virus. It sounds like a bad night at the bar. You know?
Well, it comes about where these guys are kind of pretentious assholes who feel like they are the Knights of King Arthur's Round Table. They got a Lancelot. They got a Galleon. They have, and the main guy's name is Arthur. So they're kind of going for this whole vibe.
Okay.
And so Iron Man goes there with his giant warehouse thing that floats that has his armor type stuff in it.
It looks like a couple TARDIS is next to each other, but
or one of those giant container trucks. But he starts fighting these other techno pilots, what you'd call what Iron Man is. Like, okay. They're in suits and they're piloted by people who have flown them. Like as War Machine, he's a good pilot. Like, not anyone can just get in the armor and be as good as Iron Man. You could have the best armor in the world, but what they're trying to say is it's the man who makes the armor be great.
Sure.
They also kind of go with Merlin, who is the chick that created the thing, who is an old enemy. Obviously, these are old enemies of Tony Stark. She was pretty much made fun of due to Tony Stark. Back in the day, she created this type of shield that would totally negate his repulsor beams. Like, nothing could get through this shield. And at the day of demonstration, what Tony Stark did was, instead of getting through the shield, he hacked into the system that was making the shield and then blew up the tank that the shield was behind it.
Interesting.
She was pissed because he cheated. He goes, it doesn't matter. It's not about cheating. I beat your system. Which is true. So she's got a vendetta against him. He goes about fighting these people in a gladiatorial style, fighting here and there, and each one is just a little bit better than the other ones. Finally, Lancelot comes out, which...
The boss battle, basically.
Kind of, and of course, Iron Man says, why they call you that? Are you sleeping with the boss's wife or something? And Lancelot is actually a good pilot. You don't know who it is, but he's using the armor how it should. They don't have as great of armor as Tony Stark does, and you can see in each, before each battle, he goes into this little weapons house, gets some new enhancements, takes out, you know, some power to a gun, puts in here and there.
Pips
and this
suit.
Yeah, and this person's talking about how some of the other pilots, one was a gymnast who could jump around and stuff, but they weren't using the armor to fullest. Instead of jumping, use your repulsor rays to spin you a little bit farther. Use it here. Instead of punching with your fist, hit it with your elbow and use the repulsor to hit them even farther across the head. So imagine you're elbowing someone and you can use that to your advantage. So this person's kind of beating the shit out of Tony. Tony might lose. Previous to this match, though, he said, take off my repulsor cannon in my arm and put it to an infrared laser gun. So as they're fighting, he then shoots. The first previous couple of times, he starts shooting towards where the virus was. They brought the extremist virus out on display. Kind of pretentious asshole saying, you know, you can't do anything about it. Merlin saying, yeah, try to get past that one. So in one of the times, he augments his suit to be hackerish, trying to hack her in. And she's like, you know, I blocked you. You're not going to hack into this one and screw me like you did before. So what he does is, right when he's getting his ass kicked in this last battle, takes this infrared laser, goes right through the shield, destroys the extremist virus. He goes, maybe next time you stop trying to outthink me and think about your shield and what can get through it, like X-ray lasers. You went against my repulsor rays, you went against my hacking, but there are simpler things that could have gotten through that. And she's just pissed. She's like, not again, not again, not again. So these guys, he then ends up leaving. But obviously this isn't the end of this Knights of the Round Table type group. And at the very last thing, it shows the person who was this Lancelot, who was actually a chick. I have no clue who the fuck she is, though.
She kind of looks like, she looks like, redhead. So has a little bit of Rachel Summers look to her, but she also looks a little bit like Sarah Alves Cole, who was the Punisher. But then again, I love Greg Land's art, but it's hard to tell because...
Well, I'm guessing this has to be a person from Iron Man's past.
Well, see, everybody looks the same when Greg Land draws him. I don't have a problem with that because I like the way he draws him. You know, it's kind of like Joseph Michael Linsner. He draws the best woman I've ever seen, but he only draws that one woman. You know, but I absolutely love what he does. So I don't know.
And see, I was going to look it up and see who it was to spoil it to everyone, but I think I'm just going to leave this one out in the open. For those people that love Iron Man, you'll be surprised when you read it and be like, holy shit, that's so-and-so. And then email me and let me know who so-and-so is, because I have no clue. But overall, a good story to this whole story arc, and I'm very intrigued with this whole mindset of pilots versus technology.
Yeah, very cool. Oh, one thing we forgot to say in case people at home didn't figure it out, we spoil shit. You know, sometimes we don't spoil all of it, but there's your warning. It's a little late, but, you know, it's kind of like you should have put the condom on, you know. But anyway, speaking of spoilers, this one, this next review I've got is Amazing Spider-Man number 697 from Marvel, written by Dan Slott, art by Richard Elson, and the cover was done by Paulo Rivera. Now, I'm going to have to say before I get too far into it for listeners at home that I only just started picking up Amazing Spider-Man like 3 issues ago due to all the hype that was coming around it and the fact that it was ending. That said, I'm only somewhat aware of what's been going on in the past for Spidey, so just want to put that out there. This book opens on the Raft, which is a maximum security prison that's strictly for superpowered criminals, and in there we find Doc Ock on his deathbed whispering the name Peter Parker. I'm going to skip a whole bunch of other really cool stuff that happens in the book because the main part of this book is the big reveal. And I can't say this enough. There's a huge fucking spoiler here. So if you haven't read this book now, you haven't heard about the spoiler yet, hit pause, go read, then come back. Spider-Man goes in to see his old nemesis for the last time, asks to be alone with him, asks for cameras, recording devices to be turned off. And Doc Ock reveals that he is, in fact, Peter Parker. And Otto Octavius has somehow managed to switch bodies with Peter. So he's also somehow gained all of Peter's memories as well.
Well, something going along with spoilers, that page, actually, I just found out, was leaked like last week.
Yep. Well, and I'll hop into that because that's something I definitely wanted to chat with you about. So the basics here is that the physical body of Doc Ock flatlines. Medics are unable to resuscitate him. And so as far as we know, the mind of the real Peter Parker dies inside the body of his longtime foe. So a couple quick points before we get into a big discussion, because there's going to be a lot of stuff here, I think. Slott's writing has been great. He has done a really, really nice job. You know, with a good surprise here, there's a good twist at the right part of the story. I really enjoyed Elson's art on here. And because it reminded me a lot of the Spider-Man comics that I grew up with when, you know, I was growing up in the 80s. I'm maybe second-guessing myself on the art on this as to whether or not it should have been darker. But then again, I don't know. It's something I kind of, when I was looking back over the book this morning, I was like, maybe it should, maybe it shouldn't. I mean, I don't have any complaints on the art. But maybe if it was darker, I don't know, maybe if that would have given too much away.
I like the writing in itself of the characters, how they're talking, like
great dialogue.
Oh, yeah. I love when Wolverine said, you know, no one will put it past you if you, you know, punch out his lights, if he tries to fuck with your mind. And then when he does flatline, Wolverine goes, did you actually do it?
Yeah.
Like straight up Wolverine, like, you know.
Well, and there's great stuff in here. I mean, like from the guards that bust in at the beginning, one guard's getting close. It's like, this is the part in the movie where the guy jumps up and bites your face off or whatever it was that he said. I mean, it was,
I also have to say, it's kind of poignant with the fact that he is going to say goodbye to his old foe. Like, it kind of like, because you don't really see that ever.
No.
Because there's really not villains that just die. They just kind of are in the prison or whatever. But to actually see a major villain and get a call from the Avengers, hey, you might want to say your goodbyes, because the villains complete the heroes.
Yeah.
That was kind of surprising and cool.
It was pretty big. Let's get into the spoiler part.
Okay.
I believe that it was leaked the day before the book hit the shelves. I believe it was leaked on Tuesday. It might have been very, very late Monday night, but I remember seeing stuff all over Twitter. Now, I purposely stayed away from anything that would spoil it for me because I didn't want it. There's a couple questions. One, whoever spoils it, what do they honestly have to gain from it? That's what I don't get. I mean, like, what do you have to gain? There's no power involved from having it other than perceived, haha, look what I can do. There's certainly no money.
I don't think they're doing it to be malicious. I think they're doing it to be like, I'm the first to know what's going to happen in post. Like how...
The firsties.
Yes, firsties, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, that's just stupid. I mean, like, I don't get it. I kind of, like, I was joking around with some people on Twitter saying that I think, like, we've kind of put a self-imposed rule that when it comes to our own social media, that we have like a 24-hour moratorium on spoilers. You know, so come 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Thursday, fuck it, I'll talk about whatever I want. But I want to give people at least a chance to read it, you know, and if you miss it, well, then you miss it. But yeah, it kind of pissed me off a little bit that somebody would do that, you know, to any book. There were some really good points made online, though, that one page doesn't make a whole story. And it certainly doesn't, because there's so much more in this book that was great.
And it actually, that one page doesn't necessarily get the gist of, yeah, as you said, the story.
Well, I mean, the buildup with, you know, what we think is Peter Parker talking with MJ and with Aunt May and, you know, being at work. And when you see that and you go back, you realize, oh my God, now he's like going, oh yeah, I can do so much more than, you know, in my job as a, you know, inventor.
Yeah.
than what I've ever done. There's so much more. You're like, wow, Parker's being a little cocky, but
yeah. And which is different. And that also makes me wonder, though, he still has got that Peter Parker flair for saying shit, you know.
Well, he's got all of his memories, so that's true. You know, he knows how to work it.
But it makes you wonder, when the fuck did this happen?
Yeah, and that's one of the great things, because, I mean, we've got two more issues before Amazing Spider-Man ends, which is, I'm really looking forward to it. So, I mean, I guess here's the other question before we get off of this book. Now that Peter Parker's dead, that, you know, supposedly Doc Ock has his body, we have a better understanding now of why Superior Spider-Man can't be Peter. Is Superior Spider-Man going to be Otto Octavius? I mean, do you think that's what they're going with?
It's got to be.
You know, because the question that I had when I started reading this is that, do Peter's memories invade Otto's brain and actually make him want to be a good guy?
Well, it's got to be. He seems to still want to be to Peter Parker.
Well, yeah, but is he only fighting the crime and stuff for the sake of the whole ruse, you know? Or does he want to be a good guy now? I don't know. It's a great book.
It'd be nice to see Peter Parker be a little more of a bad ass, you know, instead of web you and throw you in the raft. So it'd be kind of cool take if Superior is now more like Scarlet Spider-Man and will,
yeah,
kill things.
All the powers and all the responsibilities.
Yeah.
So here's the question. Is Peter Parker dead for good?
The body's gone.
Well, the brain's gone.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to find out. But
we'll ask Uncle Ben.
Yeah, there you go. So that's it. Definitely go buy that book. Tony, I know you got another one, kind of Spider-Man related, actually.
Yep. Minimum Carnage Omega one shot. Part 6 of the overall story. Just like the one-shot alpha. This is the bookend of following Scarlet Spider and the Venom books in this series to the Microverse. Carnage escaped there. He is wreaking havoc. And some cool things happened in the books. I just didn't have time to talk about them the last couple weeks. I figured I'd do it once I got towards the last book. And you learn a little bit more of the Microverse, which, as the Avengers have also recently gone to the Microverse, and I don't know if they've been using the Microverse as they're trying to bring that back into the Marvel Now canon.
Give me like a 15-second breakdown of the Microverse.
Microverse is inner space. There is the universe, there's limbo, there's different dimensions that intertwine with, and inner space is inside the Earth.
It's inner.
Yeah, it's pretty much, think of like it's a microcosmic, you can go to it in almost any part of the world, and you'll be sucked into like a smaller universe.
Okay, so it's like in the core of the Earth.
Not really, I mean it could be in the core here, it doesn't matter where it is, it's just trans-dimensioning into the micro universe.
All right.
So you see instead of stars, you see like atoms and this and that, just to make it a different feel.
Got it.
A lot of things are aliens. Hulk has been sent there multiple times when they've tried to get him out of the world. Captain Universe. And some other things have come out of there, and it was really big back in the past. And so I think they're trying to get it to come around. What you find out is Carnage was brought there to wreak havoc on the Microverse. Pretty much there's a guy in there who has found out that when the symbiotes come there, they pretty much take over. Like, there's no stopping them, and they break about the microverse. Because this guy wants to start new. He wants to be God. And so by controlling this thing that's going to be the destroyer, he feels that he's going to be the God of the microverse. But what you find out is the microverse is tied directly to the overall universe. The microverse is what holds the universe together. You destroy the microverse, it destroys the outside world as well. So it's more spanning than just this small little universe and let it die and, sure, and whatever. They get Carnage out of there, so that doesn't happen. But Carnage is then back in the world where, in Houston, Texas, where Scarlet Spider is, and Scarlet Spider and Venom are still in the microverse. They eventually get out, but they're small. They're because of the shape-shifting, whatever, dimensional.
So they're like the mini-mates of the 616.
And so they're fighting this giant Carnage monster who is, like, just wreaking havoc and just destroying these people. Like, in the books that have Carnage, there is no filter. There's just blood and awesomeness.
So there's a lot of carnage.
Eventually, the time warp, whatever, catches up, and Venom and Scarlet Spider then become back big, and they start fighting him. And they eventually get him knocked out. What ultimately comes out of this, they took a sonic grenade from the micro universe, blew it up inside Venom, and he kind of got knocked out. When he was knocked out, you see Cletus Kasady's body just laying there.
Okay.
And Scarlet Spider, who I love to death because he is not Peter Parker.
Yeah.
He's not afraid to kill people. And he pretty much lobotomizes him.
Wow.
He says, this is not, you know, he's been escaping. It's not because of Cletus Kasady. It's not because of Carnage. It's because of you talking to Venom and me. It's because we let him do this. We lock him up. We know he's going to break out. He's Carnage. And then he goes on a killing spree. We need to kill what's wrong with him. We can't just lock him up again.
Yeah.
And so pretty much he takes his neural stingers and pretty much lobotomizes Cletus Kasady.
So there's no more Carnage.
That's what you would hope. Carnage has bonded to the atomic level with Kasady. He is physically bloodstream DNA Cletus Kasady. When he came out of the microverse, they already said something snapped. Now they know that he's captured in a shield holding cell. We all know that eventually he's probably going to get out, but Cletus Kasady's brain is dead. The human part of Carnage is dead. Now there's only Carnage.
Wow.
And from that...
That's a hell of a panel.
It's going to bring so much more to when he comes out. Like, I've been loving... Last year they had Carnage USA. Before that, they had another Carnage thing the year before. It seems like they're kind of doing this in small segments because you can't just have them run havoc on the U.S. After Maximum Carnage, that was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, before... He's kind of wiped off the face of the earth. Him coming down is one of the coolest things, one of the greatest bad guys that you just can't get rid of, and now they've just made him even worse.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome. So, cool. Well, I'm glad you filled me in on that, because I picked up Alpha, and I never picked up the rest of them just because I buy so many damn books. I'm just like, I'll wait for Tony to tell me about it. So, all right, I've got one more book here for off the shelf. Indestructible Hulk number one from Marvel. Definitely a Marvel heavy week for us, but, you know, it's with all this Marvel now, it's kind of hard not to.
I'll tell you this. If you can find it, you better pick it up. My comic book shop did not have it. They sold out right away. And I've heard from everyone that it is a great book.
Yeah, it is. It's written by Mark Waid, who, you know, I've talked great things about Waid before. Drawn by Lionel Francis Yu, and colors were from Sunny Go. I hope I'm pronouncing the last name right there. It's G-H-O. This book is a ton of fun. You basically have Maria Hill trying to track down Bruce Banner, only for him to show up and basically sit in her lap now that he's ready to talk to her. Like, she's been trying to chase him down, but he's like, no, I knew where you're at. I know you're looking for me, but I'm not going to let you find me. He comes to her because he's got this great idea that S.H.I.E.L.D. and himself can come to an agreement. He's basically offering up his services as a one-man wrecking crew in return for, like, a huge science lab and an even bigger budget. And the cool thing I liked about it was he goes, look, he goes, I've come to realize I'm not going to be able to separate myself from the Hulk. It's always going to be part of me. So he goes, rather than, and I think he mentions diabetes in here, which was kind of cool, because he goes, rather than, like, say, I need to cure this right now, he goes, I need to figure out how to live with it first. So he goes, I'm going to Hulk out from time to time. So when that happens, you guys point me in the right direction, let me smash shit, and then when I'm done, wash, rinse, repeat. You know, and I'm like,
don't just keep coming after with tanks and guns.
Yeah. He's like, it was just let me do my shit. When I Hulk out, throw me someplace where I can be useful. And then pick me up after the dance is over, you know, that kind of thing. The art is off the charts good on this book. I mean, Yu's at the top of his game. And the main enemy in this is the Mad Thinker. And I love the fact that he drew him sitting like the classic sculpture of the Thinker by Rodin. You know, just in there. And like, it's like, oh, like a lot of people may not have caught it, but it's so, such a nice homage to it. His double page spread in the middle of this, Tony, just take a peek, go right to the middle, because I know you, obviously, you didn't get it. Fucking crazy good.
That one?
Yeah. Just crazy on his art. As for the writing, there's a ton of great action mixed in, as well as a really well-crafted story. There's some really intelligent dialogue. I love seeing Maria Hill winding up to crack Bruce Banner in the back of the head with, like, a 2x6, because he's like, well, all right, well, you know, basically he does his audition going after the Thinker, the Mad Thinker. And so he's like, all right, well, I guess it's time to get started. And you see Maria Hill behind him with a 2x4 just swinging for home. And, you know, all in all, I'm a big fan of Mark Waid's, and that's the reason I tried this book. I honestly don't know if I ever have purchased another Hulk book in my life up until this. But I'm really glad I picked this up on Wednesday. This is definitely two mugs up. It's the perfect storm of a comic book. Everybody needs to go buy this one. So that does it for me on Off the Shelf. Tony, did you want to throw one last little shout-out in now, or do you want to throw something?
I'll wait that till later.
Okay. You want to jump into news and notes? Because I think I got something that's a... Apparently, I'm the only one that didn't know that this was news.
Go for it.
The Marvel AR, the augmented reality, where you use your smartphone or you use your tablet or whatever, and you scan on any page where it has like a little AR on it, is fantastic because it gives you all kinds of little backgrounds and this and that, and it's cool. Up until this week, I always thought when they put the AR on the front cover that it was just telling you that there's that kind of stuff on the inside. I didn't know you could scan the cover.
Yes, and scanning the cover actually brings some of the better parts of the ARs to life.
Well, and I mean, it's great because it gives you so much background. So people, if you've got the AR and you're like, I don't know if I really want to jump into this because I don't know enough about the background, like every one of these is given such great background. So I'm an idiot, but I figure there's probably at least one more idiot out there that listens to us. So
nope, they're all going to flood your inbox being like, nope, not me. Nope, that wasn't me.
Derek's a retard. You know? So, all right. So
let's go to Schnick.
Schnick. Yes. Yeah. Wolverine is coming out with, guess what? Another title. So
I don't understand because they just had this. What's going to be the differences?
Between Wolverine and Savage Wolverine?
Just one is he's in the Savage Land? Like that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what was the difference between when there was Wolverine the best at what they're best at what he does, or the best
there
is?
That was a totally different, I read some of those. That was an interesting take on having him pretty much take on these deadly foes, toxins, and just introducing new villains. And having a whole mind warp game played against him, but this I don't know what the differences of the two books are going to be. Which one's going to be the main title? Which one is going to be the off brand? Get more Wolverine.
I don't know, but it's like I started thinking about it, and you know, you've got Wolverine, you've got Savage Wolverine, you've got Wolverine and the X-Men. Then you also have him in Uncanny X-Force. Well, which that's coming to an end, his role there, when they start over with the Marvel now. But I don't know how big his role in all new X-Men is. I don't know how big his role will be in the new Uncanny X-Men. But he's in Amazing X-Men, or Astonishing X-Men, sorry.
Well, even though I have problems with putting same characters in a lot of different titles, at least those I can kind of say they're two different. Well, there's many different clones, but I mean he's in those other groups doing other shit, so they're following that group story, and then on his lunch break he goes to the school and does this. Just having two main titles is what I have the problem with. Like when there's the main title of Deadpool, but then Deadpool Killustrated and stuff, you know that other title is an off-brand title.
Right.
You know that it's just some other thing. Like I'm saying, which one then is the real Wolverine?
Yeah, it's at some point you kind of got to just cut it out.
Well, the real Wolverine, please stand up.
So, that kind of leads me into a question for you, Tony. I mean, overall, what are you thinking of the whole Marvel now? You know, it's not a reboot.
Well, it definitely isn't a reboot. It's definitely not like how they did Flashpoint. So,
well, it's definitely not how they did the New 52 for DC.
Mm-hmm. But it's definitely changing a lot of things.
I like it. I got to say, overall, I mean, there are some things I don't like. Like the fact, well, I hated the fact that they ended Uncanny X-Men. But that was before all this started.
And then they'll redo that one later anyways.
But, you know, I mean, Amazing Spider-Man, you know, ending that. I can understand now why they're ending Amazing Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And I understand the whole Superior thing now.
Yeah. Or at least we have an idea, you know. But I got to say, I mean, I picked up a ton of books that I've never picked up before. And a couple of them I've really, really enjoyed. So I think Marvel's whole marketing scheme on this has actually worked in their favor. But speaking of Marvel and DC, we got some news there.
Oh, yeah. Thor is taking on Captain Marvel.
Like the DC Shazam Captain Marvel, not the hot one.
Yeah, mistaken with our Captain Marvel, which of the same name.
Yeah. So, but it's funny because now I guess they can finally use the name of Captain Marvel on a cover with Shazam. Legally, because they legally can't.
Mm-hmm.
So, It's kind of cool. I don't know. Like, I mean, I just saw this. I read it earlier in the week and saw some little notes here and there, people talking about it. I don't know when it's supposed to come out, but it's kind of a cool thing that they're going to have another crossover between the big two. I always like those.
Well, yeah, and they haven't done those in years. It's been since the 90s, and I've got all of those DC versus Marvel.
Was Marvel versus DC, was that the last time that they did any kind of crossovers?
They did the crossover, and then they did one more, the amalgam, when they melded together.
They did the amalgams, and then that broke out, and then they ended it.
Because they had DC versus the first thing, and that was the first fight battle. And then when they, at the end of the battle, there was two celestial gods. What you find out, and it's kind of the cool thing with, I like a lot of the universal stuff in Marvel, you know, that we're in the 616 universe. Celestials are kind of the overall gods of the universe of Marvel. And there's multiple different worlds. There's the Ultimate Universe. There's the 617 universe. In Marvel, they actually have a designated universe for DC. Floating in the multi-universe space. I forget what the number is. There's a book of the multiple universes and Age of Apocalypse universe. And each one of these has a celestial god kind of creature that overlooks them. So when you found out what the DC versus the Marvel thing was, it went down to kind of the overall gods. And when they then decided to merge the two worlds together was when they got the amalgam universe.
You know, I'm curious because, I mean, Marvel doesn't seem to have too much of a problem being able to explain a crossover like this. With DC and the whole New 52, I'm wondering if they will just not even say it's part of their mainstream canon now.
They probably won't, because DC has gone through the greatest to make sure their other universes are small. They've made sure that they've only had, through the Infinity Crisis, through all the other Crisis books that they had, to make sure that there's only an Earth 1 and Earth 2, and I think ultimately they said there's 52 different Earths.
Yeah.
So they have 52 different universes.
Because you got the Smallville Earth.
Yep. and yeah. other Earths that they haven't even explored yet or talk about unless they come up with a random comic in that universe, where Marvel just kind of is like, yeah, that's a different time stream. I mean, Fantastic Four, they create alternate universes every time they go somewhere.
Yeah, and every time Franklin farts, there's a new universe. So, yeah. Cool. Tony, there is something I know you want to talk about. Little zeros and ones.
Yeah, we can get into that. So as we mentioned last week, was it, mm-hmm. I believe, of the Age of Ultron, they've finally started teasing it and talking about it for the first time. One of the things I have to say, the Avengers number 34, End Times, the last issue of Bendis's run on the Avengers, it's worth the buy for nothing else besides the comic run in his end. But he has a long goodbye letter to fans to explain some things of his run over the many years since 2004. He says it comes out to he's made 232 Avengers titles.
Wow.
Whether that's New Avengers, Mighty Avengers, the Illuminati, annuals, whatever. And it all came from when he was allowed, when he was starting on the Ultimates universe, and they needed someone to come up with, they had this giant boot camp session. What can we do to sell books? Why are we selling these titles? One of the things that came about it, like, what's the essence of each title?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, for example, Iron Man was a boy and his toys. And they're like, that's perfect. That's what it is. That's what sells.
Yeah.
Someone said the Avengers, you know, well, they're Earth's Mightiest Heroes. And he was like, well, why wouldn't Spider-Man and Wolverine be on that team then? They're the mightiest. And that came about to where they're going to start pitching a new book for the new Avengers, which then they had to disassemble the Avengers, which then ultimately Bendis came on board to do. When he knew he was going to have Avengers assembled, he knew that someone needed to die, which reading this whole thing gives you a glimpse of kind of some of the back workings.
Yeah.
There are lists of people who they will allow you to kill. And that list is few.
Yeah.
And when he saw on there Hawkeye, that just name just came, I don't even know what the other ones were, but when they killed Hawkeye and Avengers Assembled, that was kind of a big thing. Obviously, he's come back, because most things happen. He's had his hands on Secret Invasion, Civil War, all these great things that have come out of Marvel, with the exception of Fear Itself, and they've been overall great for the industry, for the stories, for all of Marvel. And Age of Ultron's been teased for years now, and it's finally coming to fruition. Even though he's leaving the Avengers, he's having full hands on this big universe-spanning miniseries. It's going to be 10 books for the main thing, and there's going to be obviously the offshoots yeah. of each individual titles going with it. But ultimately, it's about Ultron fulfilling his plan to take over all of Earth. Ultron being the robot that Henry Pym created to defeat Thanos at one point.
Yeah. I'm going to have to go back and do some back issue reading, I think.
Oh, for sure. This, from Disassembled up till now, just is what got me and my brother started reading Avengers. And obviously he's not here to talk about this, so I'm taking his Avengers corner to talk about it.
But, oh, you just took his Avengers card.
Yes. But literally out of all things, and in this book, just to kind of throw out, I love when Captain America says, you know, well, what do we do now? And Tony goes, I know exactly what we do. Captain goes, what? We go bigger, Tony Stark says, which is obviously going into the new event, the next Avengers titles. What are they going to be?
Is this running? I guess is the timeline of this, is this the same timeline as Uncanny Avengers, or is this like, because you know how sometimes they release books and the story doesn't necessarily, the timing of the stories don't necessarily line up.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you look at all the tie-ins from AVX, some of those stories were like 2 weeks after the book came out, and it was supposed to be before that book came out to like lead up to it. And you're like, wait, what? Is this on the same exact timeline as Uncanny Avengers, or is that going bigger? Is that talking about Uncanny Avengers?
I think it's talking about multiple different teams. I mean, okay. you don't necessarily know. It's Tony Stark. What's he thinking? But obviously,
he's thinking booze and boobs. But Yeah.
So ultimately, there's stuff online of just talking about what has gone on with Bendis' run. Sucks to see him leave. I forget which comics he's overtaking now, though.
Oh, God.
Oh, X-Men. That's what he's doing. He's heading over to the X-Men franchise, which, for you, Derek, you're going to have one hell of a ride because he's a phenomenal writer. He makes things happen that come to fruition years later that you're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
So well, that's one of the reasons why I enjoyed the Uncanny X-Force is because there were so many things that were picked up that were more or less left hanging from previous story arcs before that I thought was great, you know. So one other news and note thing here, and this is something that pissed me off a little bit, was that DC and Marvel were releasing, at least, like, I don't know if it was this last week or if it was the week before, released their issues digitally at, like, 12:01 a.m. or whatever it may have been on Wednesday morning, meaning that anybody that wanted to read them didn't have to wait until, say, roughly 10 a.m. when your local shop opened, or what used to be the 2 o'clock time where they said, we'll wait, you know, that way people can go get to the stores and there aren't going to be spoilers before people even walk in the door. So, I mean, this kind of goes back to our spoiler before, but I'm a huge, huge, huge supporter of local comic shops. I mean, I think that's, without local comic shops, you're not going to have people that get into them the way that you and I did, you know. And I mean, especially me when I was a little kid, I mean, going to the comic book store, I mean, that was the biggest deal in the world. I mean, it was way better than the toy store because there were so many things. All the toys were hidden inside the covers, you know, what your mind was going to open up to. And it pisses me off. I mean, I understand that this world is becoming a more and more digital world, but I don't know. It frustrated me that, to me, it seemed like a slap in the face to the retailer.
Oh, for sure. It's going, I want to say it's not going to hurt them because people that buy digital, they're going to buy digital anyways. And people like us, we like the in-hand comic book.
Right.
So I want to pray that that doesn't happen, because if that starts happening, there goes our in-hand paper.
Yeah. I think the collector side of everything will keep the paper copy going for years and years.
But I find it bullshit, though, like you said, that we then have to wait until 9 o'clock to start reading this when the comic book shop's open.
Well, yeah, and I mean, if anybody that listens to this show is probably already tied into social media one way or the other. You know, obviously you're tied into the internet somehow. And so now you have to avoid the internet for a couple hours. So you go, I mean, it's hard enough with spoilers that get out there.
And it's all a money grab because the publishers are like, well, we can then physically track how many are downloaded at this time, how many are doing this. We get the money up front right now.
Yeah.
We don't have to pay anyone else to print this because it's all digital. Yep. And
yeah, I mean, and they're, you know, say it's a $3.99 comic, it's probably $2.99 digital, you know. So now you don't have the cost of the printing, you don't have the cost of the shipping, which I'm pretty sure that the stores are paying shipping anyway. You don't have the cost for the distribution, and you don't have to cut your cost to sell it so that comic store can sell it at $2.99. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it is. It's a big money grab. So, anyway, that one pissed me off. So, basically, well, all I'm saying, go support your local shops. You know, whether you've got a local brick-and-mortar store or you're going to somebody like Intercomics, you know, you're buying them online, it's still a local shop. Support them.
One thing that pisses me off that I was speaking to you earlier about is variant covers sometimes and how ridiculous they are when they could be sweet as hell as well. Speaking specifically of Spawn 225, the art is amazing. The way that they did it to look like the Before Watchmen and Watchmen series with the smiley face and the blood drop, like, awesome. But then they have to be a cash money grab and put fucking Obama wins or Romney wins.
Yeah.
And they didn't even care who won the election. They just decided to slap those on there knowing if you're Republican or Democrat, which way you go, you're going to buy that copy or you're going to look for that copy.
Or maybe you'll buy both.
Yeah.
Because you'd be like, well, I want the one because he won, but I'm going to buy the Romney one because it's going to be worth more because it'll be, it's like a misprint.
Yeah, and it's like, why would you even slap that on there? What was the point of that? And that has nothing to do with the fucking story.
No, or the cover.
Yeah, and the, like I said, that ruined... I almost bought the book for that cover.
Yeah.
Because it was so awesomely looking. And then I look at that and I'm like, this is retarded.
There's one thing that I think should always be left out of comics, and that's current politics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you can talk about it in a number of different ways. I mean, I think X-Men's the perfect example, talking about civil rights, you know. And hell, I mean, even now through Astonishing X-Men, when Northstar got married to, you know, his longtime partner, you know, that's fine. You can do that kind of stuff in there, but they also addressed it properly. But you don't just have to throw somebody's name on a fucking book just to sell more copies. I mean, come on. It's not like Todd McFarlane's hurting for cash.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, so that just kind of pissed me off. One last thing in news and notes, which is actually pretty badass. The Phase 1 box set of Marvel has come out. It was supposed to come out September 23rd, I believe. But you were telling me the reason why it was delayed?
Oh, well, originally what I'd heard was that this huge box set was supposed to be put in a briefcase, like, you know, that it hold the... that was holding the Tesseract, or whatever the fuck you call it, that whoever, it's some big luggage manufacturer made this, and so then they started recreating these to look like that and put out this giant box set. But then they said, whoa, wait a minute, we didn't authorize you to make those as replicas and resell them. That wasn't part of our licensing agreement. So there's a little bit of a court battle there, so I'm guessing now that may have been taken care of, and they may have made some changes, because the picture you showed me didn't look like the original one that I saw.
Yes, but this still looks phenomenally beautiful. It is going to retail for $219, so guess that's going to probably be marked up a little bit at some certain shops just because of the high exclusivity of the giant box set.
It's going to be one of those things where when it comes out, you're going to have nerds lining up at Best Buy to go suck them all up, and then they're going to be selling them at their comic shops for $300.
Yep.
I love the comic shops, but that's one of the things I don't agree with. But
now, and $219 seems like a huge price tag for this, but it comes with 10 discs. It comes with 6 of the movies of Phase 1 that they've done. It has extra behind-the-scenes featurettes of the different movies, but the coolest thing is they have previews, sketches, other things of Phase 2 that's going on with, such as Thor 2, Captain America 2, Guardians of the Galaxy, and Avengers 2, that they're going to be teasing to give you a glimpse of what's going to be happening. Plus, they got a giant fucking glowing cosmic cube in there, which is cool.
You know, I just thought of something. One thing that I think would really be cool to see them do is if they had a limited edition comic book of... and maybe do the Marvel Nows. Have a Hulk. Have a Thor. Have a Captain America. You know, have a Hawkeye in there. Have, I don't know if anybody really wants to read Black Widow, but, you know, put a Black Widow something in there. But have those comics in there. Something that's already been printed. It doesn't have to be something brand new. But there's a great incentive to have a variant cover of that book. Only available in there. And then you might be able to bridge the gap, too, between some of the movie, you know, like what I just call kind of the general nerds, you know, the mainstream nerds, to bridge them over and start reading a comic book and go, wow, I really like that. That's cool. You know, and want to get to know more. Opportunity possibly missed.
Ultimately, though, I know what's on my wish list for Christmas, so
yeah.
Let's see if Santa can actually find that or if I'm going to have to scour eBay.
I have a feeling you're scouring eBay. So,
all right, let's move on to Indie Turnpike.
All right.
And I actually have one that I want to kind of go over. It was something that caught my eye. It's number 13, number 0.
Yeah. And for people listening at home, Indie Turnpike, if this is your first time listening, this is where we grab a book that is not one of the main two publishers and kind of give it a little extra, you know, shining light on it where maybe it wouldn't have before. So.
And the thing with, you know, independent type books is, half of them, you're halfway through like a series or an arc, and I don't want to just jump in and grab a random comic. I want to start from the beginning. So this being a number 0 issue, I'm like, sweet, that's even before number 1. I'm going to jump on in. And it really got me within the first...
Now, this is number 13. Who published this one? Do you remember?
This is... just
a sec. Sorry, I'm throwing you off here because I didn't remember. I read it when you handed it to me, but of course I didn't remember to bring it with
it's
me.
Dark Horse Comics.
Dark Horse, okay.
Written by Robert Love and David Walker. Art by Robert Love. Ultimately, it's about a post-apocalyptic world where mutants and giant ogres are on the rise, and there's this kid. And that's kind of what you're started off with until the fourth or fifth page, which is what really just got me hooked on this, was this giant ogre starts running towards this kid, and he's just sitting there like nothing bad's going to happen. And out, his gun arms turn into giant gun turrets and fucking blast the shit out of this ogre.
Yeah.
And that, to me, I was like, wow, this kid's got some power. What the fuck? And this kid is walking around asking, where's my daddy?
Are you my daddy?
Yeah. Are you my daddy? Who am I? Totally lost. And through the different kind of chapters that they broke up this first issue in, kind of reveals a story of this world, of the virus that was released, of this man who then created this bio-organic technological something or other to bond to humans to make this kid, obviously, techno.
And others like him, yes. Apparently.
And ultimately to destroy humans, because all these mutants are humans that he just wants to eradicate from the world because he became insane. And very, very dark, especially when the father of this little girl that number 13 saved, who was then named number 13 by this girl, kills his daughter, like backhands her and breaks her neck.
Yeah.
And the boy sees that and goes ape shit and blows up the dad. And it's very... Did not see that coming, because the story was kind of in her voice of when I found him, and then she's dead. So, like I said, I really just needed to throw this out there that you should go pick it up. It seems like an awesome new story. It's something different than the regular superheroes that I've read.
Yeah. I got to say, I'm kind of proud of you for branching out on something. I mean, that's sometimes it takes a... one of those moments when you just see a book sitting on the shelf and you go, fuck it, I'm going to try it. You know, I think I'm probably 50-50 on the books that I've given a shot to this year. So I've got one as well for Indie Turnpike, Judge Dredd number 1 from IDW, written by Dwayne Swierczynski, art by Nelson Daniel and Paul Glossy. I hope I'm saying that right. Colors by Leonard O'Grady. Short breakdown of this issue, because after two movies that are out there, along with God knows how many other previous issues, I'm pretty sure most people have an idea who Judge Dredd is.
Who is he?
Well, he's kind of a cop.
Oh.
But he's also can sentence and give the punishment right then and there on the spot.
So kind of like a judge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is he dreadful?
No, that's his last name. His first name's Joe.
Really?
It is, actually. It's Dredd. Joe Dredd. Yeah. Nice. Long-lost cousin of Joe Dirt. So, in this book, Mega City 1 has a shit ton of robots working throughout it to, I guess, quote-unquote, better the lives of humans that live in it. And in this issue, those robots seem to have gained some type of sentience as well as a sense of self and ultimately turn on their masters. For those not familiar with how Mega City 1 works, or if you aren't really that up to speed on the judges and how they operate, they do a nice job giving that information to, so a new reader won't be lost, but also, you know, somebody who's familiar with the character doesn't want to, like, go judge on themselves and, you know, give themselves the death penalty because they're fucking bored. I wanted to pick this book up because I've always liked the character of Dredd, but I've only read a very small handful of other issues of the character prior to this week. And what I found probably most interesting about it were the bullet points that were actually in the very back of the book. And it kind of explains why I might not have seen as much before as I would have liked to. The first point in there that I want to talk about is that Judge Dredd is the most popular series in the history of British comic books.
Really?
Yeah. I was surprised by this, but then again, you don't hear a ton about British comics in general over here in the States, so I guess that you know, who are we to argue? The second point I wanted to touch on was one of the quotes in there. And this quote says, "It's almost always been made by and for British people." And I'm like, again, nothing I ever knew. But, you know, I'm not going to dwell too much on the book, simply because, I mean, like most first issues,
it doesn't sound British.
Well, I know. Like, I didn't hear the accent when I was reading it, but, you know, then again,
who knows? Get your tea and crumpets.
Well, that didn't sound British either. But, I mean, like I was saying, like most first issues, there's a lot of setup, but it's really well done. My only complaint, if you can call it a complaint, is that it's hard sometimes telling the difference between the individual judges in there, since you only see the bottom portion of their face. You know, maybe it's a British thing. So I'm going to call out, like, I don't know, maybe Jay Webb. Maybe you can explain this one to me.
Maybe it's when they smile and it's their teeth.
Like, that guy's got a grill, you know. Ari Carr, I know you're a Judge Dredd fan, so maybe you can fill us in on that. Maybe give us some tips, too. But I'm going to continue on with the series. It was really good. So that's it for Indy Turnpike.
All right. I am going to let you listeners know of another fantabulous website to go to.
Oh, we got an interwebs this week.
Yes, and it actually has nothing to do anything with fucking comic books. I mean, it's just something that when I'm going to throw these morsels of the web out there to some of you listeners, that when you're bored, you have nothing else to do, just go to a fucking webpage or go to fucking homepage.com.
Really? Fucking homepage.com?
Yes. This website each day has links to different things, like this one. Today, November 23rd, is fucking Friday. Do you know blah, blah, blah this? Life pro tip of the fucking day. Person of the fucking day. Trained sniper turned sex therapist. Educate your ignorant ass. Don't be such a fucking grammar Nazi. It has all these links to different articles, different things, different stuff of the day that it pertains to. It's a very, like I said, it's funny just even reading it.
Now are these links, are these not safe for work links?
Some of them are not safe for work. Some of them are. I mean, it's a lot of them are, like I said, they're links to other web pages. This one, find your fucking phone. So you click on the link, and it'll send you to this place where you can find out, like, type in your number, and it will text or make your phone vibrate. Great pro tip there. Let's click on fucking ants and see what that one's about. Oh, there's a giant fucking ant. Like I said, it's so random, and each day is different. So, like I said, fucking homepage.com.
Nice.
You'll fucking like it.
Nice. All right, I got Booze in a Book, and I think that'll come close to wrapping it up for us. Booze in a Book this week, I did Captain America number one from Marvel. So, did I do all Marvel number ones this week?
Yep.
Wow, holy shit. Written by Rick Remender, art by... No, I didn't. Amazing Spider-Man was $6.98. So it wasn't a number one. Captain America number one, written by Rick Remender, art by John Romita Jr. and Klaus Janson, as well as Dean White. I'm pairing this with a good old can of PBR, some Pabst Blue Ribbon, and a rocket pop shot. And I'm doing this because PBR was the manufacturer of the old red, white, and blue beer, and it's as close as you can get to that stuff nowadays. Rocket Pops look and taste a lot like the old tricolor popsicles that we had when we were kids. If you're not familiar with them, it's made with lemonade and raspberry Stoli, UV blue and grenadine. And if you have an awesome bartender like one that we know, they'll layer it properly so you'll get the red on the bottom, the white on the top, and the blue in the middle. Now, I went for these drinks with this book because PBR is old school, and this book definitely has some of that, especially with the main villain. And the Rocket Pop, just like the book, it's easily consumed by people with all kinds of tastes. But when both the book and that shot look as good as both of these do, they're really easy to go down. So that's it for Booze in a Book. Tony, you got anything for last call? I mean, we kind of ripped through a lot of your books already this week. I know you actually, I think a couple of yours are going to cross over to mine. So I'll rip off here. And if you got some more that you want to throw in. Captain Marvel number 7, Dexter Soy is back on art with that. Thank God. I didn't realize how crucial he was to that book. He makes that book work. Wolverine and the X-Men number 21, Astonishing X-Men 56, Daredevil number 20, Deadpool number 2. I can't believe you didn't even do a Daredevil review. That was one thing that kind of surprised me.
I read it. I just haven't. The other two just felt needed to be talked about.
Yeah. And Rocketeer Cargo of Doom number 4 of 4. If you guys didn't pick up that series, it's awesome. All I'm going to say is dinosaurs and jetpacks. All combined.
Awesome.
Dinosaurs wearing jetpacks.
And don't forget, listeners, you can find some of the reviews of some of our other books that we've read this week at the last call spot on our webpage.
Yep.
So definitely go to our webpage. It's where half of you download our podcast if you're not listening to us on iTunes. Go there. Check out what we got to say about some other books.
Find us on Facebook. We put up tons of really stupid, silly pictures to keep you occupied while you're pretending to work during the week.
Share them with your friends. You might look kind of funny, nerdy, cool, and
yeah. Also, go check out our Twitter page. A lot more conversation on that page. So, I mean, if you guys are got questions, you want to ask our opinion on stuff. Hey, did you read this? Hey, why the fuck didn't you read that? You know, you want to make fun of Tony? That's a good place because he doesn't read that Twitter that often.
Actually, I do.
Oh shit!
I got a fake name on there. I'm the one that keeps spamming you.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're the one I keep blocking. Yeah. So, check it out. We've got some more interviews that by the time you're listening to this, will have already been up. And I think we've got one more round of interviews that will be coming up midweek.
Yep.
Check it out. Happy post-Thanksgiving to everybody here
early
in the States.
Early Christmas. Happy early Hanukkah. Happy early Easter. Early 4th of July.
Early Valentine's Day.
Or late
Day.
4th of July. We're kind of in the middle part of
going
or coming from that one.
Yeah. I don't know. So, but I'm out of beer, so it's time for me to go refill. So, Tony, say goodbye.
I will say goodbye.
All right, guys. My name is Derek on behalf of myself and Tony, as well as the rest of the guys that are normally here. Keep reading those comics, and we'll be back again to talk about them next week. See ya.
Firsties. Mother, baby, the brothers, animals out of babies will soon become men. Women will find them, be lost or behind them, but that is not now. That will be then, that is not now. That will be there. Mary, Mary, are you in love with him? Is he the one? Mary, Mary, run from the moon and escape.
Sun, run from the moon and escape to the sun. Father and daughter.